Hey folks, it is Sunday night, October 29th, 2017. You're listening to episode 67 of AIH Superfans, and I am your best super friend, pal. My name is Alan, and on Twitter you can find me at Slip with five eyes, or Slip.
Hey yo, it's Roddy, and I'm a big puppy pixie.
Hey, it's Chris, and I'm rebranding. I think my name is now Winnipeg Mac on Twitter.
What?
Yeah.
Oh my goodness. And now I'm looking at your Twitter handle now. What the hell is going on with you?
I got to make some changes for something. So I got to hide away a little bit, maybe.
All right. Changes for secret things from Winnipeg Mac. And we have a guest making their first appearance as a guest on this show. So our apologies in advance, but who have we got out there?
It's Daniel at Winnipeg, or Daniel Winnipeg 55 on Twitter.
There you go.
Is that for Fifi 55?
Yeah, he's my favorite player, you know.
We should add Ryan on.
You should.
Yeah, we should get him on here. We could debate Couturier a little bit, but
Ryan, by the way, at RB_18 posted great, basically he said great win by the Jets tonight. See them live with tickets from Seat Exchange, hopefully his. So go and grab them. So Jets game tonight, and interesting because a few things that don't happen. They beat the Penguins, which rarely happens. They whipped their ass in the first period, and they were on national TV, so everybody across the country got to see it. So all those people across Canada who tuned in specifically to watch Sidney Crosby and the Penguins got to see the Jets pull off a big win. I know we were just, before we recorded, people said they saw, some of you didn't see everything. If you missed about, what, a 1 minute span in the first period, you missed three goals. But did anybody catch absolutely the whole game?
I missed the first 2 minutes.
So you missed the first goal by Andrew Kopp.
Andrew Kopp, third liner, should be fourth liner. I don't know.
the bottom six scored three goals tonight, guys.
They did.
Even Matt Hendricks got on the score sheet, so that's all right, right?
Yeah, Lord and Savior. Yeah. Somebody tweeted at me that on that Liv Hugo he had an apple, but yeah.
Yeah, awesome. So we have Andrew Kopp opening the scoring for Matthias and Enstrom. Then Wheeler got a couple of goals in a row, one from Scheifele and Connor, the other one from Matthias and Scheifele. Armia, with his second of the year from Hendricks, scored about like 30 seconds after the Wheeler goal off of a terrible giveaway from the Penguins. And then another breakdown by the Penguins about 11 seconds later, and Wheeler got his hat trick, and that was also from Connor. So it was 5-0 by the end of the first. Penguins with a goal in the second from Malkin on the power play, and then in the third, Scheifele on a 4-on-3 gets his fourth from Wheeler and Byfuglien, and Brendan Lemieux with his first NHL goal from Myers and Armia. So obviously, Wheeler with the biggest night, a hat trick and an assist for 4 points. Scheifele had a goal and 2 assists, Kyle Connor with 2 assists, and then you work your way down, though, to those fourth liners. Andrew Kopp with a goal, Hendricks with an assist, Matthias with 2 assists, Joel Armia with a goal and an assist, Brendan Lemieux with 1 goal. So that's it. Our third and fourth line scoring aplenty, right? Problem solved.
It's over. It's good.
Yeah, it's good. When's the parade?
Did we ever think that maybe Pomo is setting a new trend? Maybe he's ahead of the curve. I don't know.
Are we going to go bottom nine? Maybe bottom nine now, eh?
Well, I don't know. I think maybe from this point on, you know, when the Jets win the Stanley Cup with the bottom six, people are going to rethink how to run their hockey teams. I think Pomo is a genius, really.
In all seriousness, you don't want to poo-poo on a 7-1 game, but that was maybe the worst, like, 30 minutes of hockey I think I've ever seen a team play in 6 years that Pittsburgh played. And not, like, it was brutal on, there was no effort, first of all, but also, like, turnovers and And like, I didn't even know if Crosby was playing until the third period. You know, I'm not trying to whatever undersell the win, but that was as bad of a game as, and three or four of those goals were just like the goalie was awful. So, I mean, yeah, that's good, you know, but does it fix everything? Their record's good the last eight games, I guess. So,
well, they're five, well, they're 5-3-2. They have, you know, they haven't lost in regulation in what, four or five games. So they're getting points. They are second right now in the Central Division, having played only 10 games. They've played the second least, with Minnesota playing the least. Now there's four teams at 12 points along with the Jets, so it's a logjam. But
Well, 11. They've earned 11 out of 12 points with Connor Hellebuck in net. How about that? Like, we can't ignore that. That's been a huge part of it. And he was solid in the second period again here tonight, where they were shot whatever to four. I think it was 15-4,
yeah.
I mean, the Jets were outshot in the game 32-24, but I mean, you go up 5-0 in the first period. You don't necessarily hit the brakes, but you know, you're certainly now just kind of playing to hold on to that lead, right?
Well, that second period surely looked like it.
they were reeling that second period for sure.
On a 4-on-3, but still a power play, the Jets finally click on the power play, which was a pretty big problem on their road trip in Columbus and Pittsburgh, which were both overtime losses, but particularly the game in Columbus, just not a very good game at all, and nothing happening on the power play. In fact, the Jets only scored one goal in each of the games, so they were due to pile it on, and hopefully a power play goal tonight starts a better trend there, right? Mm-hmm. I mean,
yes. Positives, yes.
Just get the puck to Laine. Come on, just get it to him.
Laine with nothing tonight.
He almost had a fight, so that's something, right? Fight,
yeah. So, yeah, seriously, though, like, this bottom six, let's say since Patan got sent down before the Pittsburgh game, and Hendricks got reinserted back into the lineup. This bottom six, has it been as bad as we would have predicted? Be honest.
I mean,
we could argue the fact that the style of game suits having a bottom six, right? Like that game on Friday against Columbus, like, the Jets got a 1-0 lead and they played low event defensive hockey is basically what they did, and tried to ride it out, and they rode it out for a point, right? So that was a good strategy for a second road game, I guess. But I don't know. Like, it's very low event hockey, right? So those two games, they didn't have very many scoring chances, and they were horrible on the power play. But if they can hang on for dear life and you know, prevent goals, then they'll be in more games than not, I guess.
They're also getting what, 9.45 goaltending right now?
Absolutely.
Nobody sustains that, right? Even the best goalies are 9.20. So,
and that's, yeah, that's Hellebuck's, what's his average right now? 9.08 career. So,
well, I mean,
so the results have been okay. Like, 2 points on a road trip, you know, everybody was hanging their hat on the results that, you know, they did take 2 out of 4 points against two very good hockey teams, very good moral victory, right? But they were outplayed severely both games again, right? So it's not something that is sustainable at all.
Do we assume that?
And that's,
go for it.
Sorry, that's where the problem with the bottom six is going to become an issue long term, right? If they keep these guys playing, is you can have games like this, but over the course of a 10-game period, if you get outplayed the way you've been getting outplayed, and those are your bottom six guys, you're going to have trouble. That being said, I guess Perreault and Lowry are back soon, and that's going to change everything. So who knows?
Yeah, what happens when Perreault and Lowry are back? Like,
well, if you go Perreault,
who's getting benched?
Well, yeah.
You go Perot, Lowry, Armia on the third.
Yeah, that's that. Well, that Lemieux, would be almost
Lemieux gets sent down, right? Because that's a simple roster move. Because he doesn't have to clear waivers.
Or Pullman, they could send out Pullman too, which they probably should instead of making him ride the press box.
He should be playing. If he's not going to be playing, he should be playing. I mean, that seems really, really silly. Especially considering he can go up and down as much as he wants, right?
Exactly. Give him some games. Just get him out there. And the AHL is still pro hockey. I mean, better than sitting upstairs.
Well, and yeah, we have Patan playing hockey though in the AHL, and yet we're unhappy about that, right?
Okay,
you
have to resign yourself. Sorry, Daniel. I had a chat with a friend yesterday about that, and he's like, I just can't stand it because he shouldn't be in the AHL, but if he's not playing, he should be playing.
And when you have no waivers required, that's the time to get these guys playing.
That's right.
So you have the two going down as Pullman and Lemieux?
Oh, you keep one or the other.
You need two moves, though.
You need two moves.
Oh, you need two. Oh, yeah. Yeah, they should. Yeah, I would send them both, and I guess that's the two easiest transactions.
Because we're heavy on defensemen right now.
Yeah, you don't need to carry two defensemen regularly, so.
And then they'll go with a fourth line of Hendricks, Tanev, and Matthias.
Which is great. Which is fine.
Yeah, that's serviceable fourth line, yeah.
Yeah. Which is fine, which is where they should be, right? It's just the third line. You know, Perot's the X factor, and having Connor back up with the team is key to that. It's key to the top nine being serviceable like that.
Right? That's right. So,
and the only reason that happened was because of injury.
Yeah, because Perot got hurt, they brought up Connor, and thank God he's been playing the way he has, or else we'd be, when Perot's back, we'd be top six, bottom six, like clear cut.
Well, and Connor's never going back to the Moose again. Like he's an NHL player now. Well,
you had Connor. I'm not.
I don't think. How can you move him back to the? He's playing on the first fucking line. He's on the power play. Yeah. Like, you know, there's guys like Batan who, and you know what? The other thing is that because, you know, you can say is it talent? Is it opportunity? It's a combination of both at this point. But the guy is producing, so
that's right. You know, that's why he stays.
That's why he stays. Yeah.
Yeah. So I can't see him going anywhere unless he slumps for an extended period of time. And I think by the time that Perot and Lowry are ready to play hockey again, enough time won't have elapsed if he doesn't, you know, if he starts to struggle. And I don't think he will. How can you struggle when you're playing on that line?
You can't struggle with those players. I was thinking that tonight. You can't.
Yeah, they're lifting him up so much. I mean, he doesn't even need that much lifting. So
he doesn't look out of place.
No.
So let's take this a step back. If they look at that third, fourth line, like the way I just suggested, which I don't know if that's exactly what it's going to look like, but does that not go now? Aren't we going to start talking about, well, first thing is a top nine, but that's going to be probably more close to what Maurice envisioned at the beginning of the year. Are we going to have to eat a little crow about how that looks?
But he did. But he didn't envision that at the beginning of the year.
Well, maybe not. But I mean, we're 10 games in. I mean, you know, if we're looking back 40 games from now, you can pretty much say, like this is a pretty good backup plan. And
right,
you know,
but again, it took an injury for them to call Kyle Connor up.
Yeah, but that's, I mean,
but he made the team last year, right? So, I mean, we got to give some credit where credit's due, I think.
The other thing is, it took an injury, but they didn't bring him up and bury him on the third or fourth line and pull up some goof. They put him on the very top line. So you got to give credit to that for that.
Yeah, that's sure. Definitely credit worthy. Could have bumped Tanev up to the first line or something.
They did. They did have Tanev up on the second line for the
right.
So,
and he did say, Maurice did say, which is something we've all talked about for a long time. He did say when guys come up, we want them to come up into their role, not come up and play out of their role. Yeah, so that's a little bit of been the issue with Patan, I think. But that's how we've always envisioned this, is you don't come up as the Moose leading scorer and then play on the fourth line.
Right.
You come up and you play in your position. And if Tanev and Armia get hurt, you would assume that JC Lapon would be the one to get called up, not Patan or DeLeo, right? You want the guy that plays the most similar to the guy that gets hurt. That's how I see it. That's how I've always seen it when you have organizational depth.
So that being said, so do we accept that Nick Patan is not in the future plans here?
I don't think unless someone gets hurt.
Yeah, but
unless one of the top six guys gets hurt, I guess. I mean,
right. If Ehlers were to get hurt, I would suggest that Patan would come up and play on that line.
I think at this point, Patan is slotted to play a particular role. And if there's no space for him to play that role on the Jets, which is essentially a top six, then he's going to play it on the Moose.
Right. Or they could package him and make a deal happen. Like, apparently, there's teams looking for a goalie, right? So Hutchinson and Patan might net something better in return. Who knows? If they don't believe that he's at that point of the progression right now, like, why don't they use this asset to gain something great back? Because obviously he's not going to be there. Like, so if Nick Ehlers gets hurt, I'm not convinced that they put Patan up there.
I think
they put Matty P up there on the second line.
I think they have a different interpretation of depth than fans do, or we do, or than even other teams do, and that maybe that's where we've been led astray. I think their interpretation is you have two of the same sort of teams up and down, and then you mix and match those guys maybe, and like
kinda
like a
pull out and plug in kind of thing, not a shuffle around.
Yeah, if you're the first line in the Moose, you're a second or first line replacement for the Jets. And if you're second line for the Moose, you're a third or fourth line replacement for the Jets.
So at this point, if Matty P and Ehlers are healthy and one of them, well, if Ehlers goes down, you don't think Matthew Perreault fills that line?
Why are we picking on Ehlers? Why does it have to be Ehlers?
No, just as an example.
Somebody in the top six, left wing, right? Because Nick Patan is not going to be a center with the Jets organization, period, I don't think, anymore. Like, everybody's saying he's got to get used to his role on the wing. So,
which is fine. He's a pretty good winger, too. So, if they're going to use him that way, I mean, hopefully they call him up if, for example, Ehlers does go down. Like, I mean, I don't think they will. I do think they'll move up Perreault and call up maybe someone else and to throw in the third or fourth line, and that's bad.
But Patan's first contract's up this year, right?
This should be his third year? Should be.
Yeah.
Yeah, but there's plenty of time to another junk contract, right?
Well, yeah, but
does he have RFA status? I don't know.
No.
Maybe you're right, Roddy.
No, this is his entry level. They got him under control for another 4 years after this.
At least, but his first his entry level contract's up this year, so they got to piss or get off the pot with him, I think.
They'll give him a qualifying offer, I'm sure, for whatever, and if he's smart, he might hold out.
I don't know. I don't think it's gonna happen. I don't think the dude has any leverage. Like, as much as the only, you know, we sit here and we complain about his usage, but you know, when you look at him statistically, what are you going to put in front of an arbitrator? His, what, 5 goals in 80 games or whatever he's got? Like, I'm sorry, but
I'll put up a life-size poster of Chris Thorburn in my negotiations right beside me.
And unfortunately, that's not how it works. Like, this is not working for the guy. Like, we talk about this guy like he's a 40-goal scorer. And he's, honestly, like, I agree that he's misused, and I agree that he should have an opportunity on a top six somewhere, but he hasn't done anything, guys.
Where is he going to succeed? Like, have they put him in a place to succeed? Have they put him in a place to produce?
They put him that one time last year with Wheeler and Connor or something for a bit there where they did really well in November.
Yeah, he played, he played six games with Wheeler last year and he got 8 points or something like that. Yeah. I mean, so yeah, that's a small sample size, of course. And I agree with what you're saying, Alan. I think for me, the Patan thing is more like, it's more like an all-encompassing thing. It's not even necessarily about Nick Patan. It's about the thought process. It's about we can't have three lines that are all spread out and play them all 17 minutes a game. And put Adam Lowry as your fourth line center. That's more what it's about for me. You can't figure out a way to make all of these guys play together. That's what I can't figure out.
All of these guys they've drafted and developed. And
that's right.
Now they're just kind of hanging out in the AHL where they might do something more in the NHL if they played with the right guys.
And all I'm saying is we got to pump the brakes on this Patan stuff to a certain extent. Like, for example, saying, like, can he hold out after his entry level contract is done?
I was over exaggerating on that.
Yeah.
But
but we've had third line Tanev all year. How does that make sense?
Well, Tanev has as many career goals as Nick Patan does, right? He has more.
He's a fixture on the third line. Like for a draft and develop team, like we put a lot of stock into two gritty fucking free agents. Like Brandon Tanev was an unsigned NCAA free agent, right? He wasn't a draft and develop guy, right? We just signed Matt Hendricks, and he's like God. Like, are we a draft and develop organization?
By the way, Brandon Tanev has more goals than Nick Patan in his career.
Yeah. Well, he's been a fixture in the lineup. He's been an NHLer for most of it.
He's played fewer games. He's played 64 games. Nick Patan has played 80 plus. I'm sorry. I'm just telling you what those numbers tell me. Those are the numbers. If you line them up side by side right now, they're the same thing.
Okay, Tanev's better. I give up.
I'm not saying he's better. I don't think he's better, but that's what the numbers will tell you right now. Did I just hear a toilet flush?
that was Nick Patan's career.
My wife just flushed the toilet.
Yeah. That was like Roddy's hopes about Nick Patan being a number one center.
Just went that right was, down the toilet.
You just hear them go right down the toilet.
Those were timing, yeah.
I just like at this point, and again, like we came on here after the Leafs thumped the Jets 7-1 and we were doom and gloom. So I'm not saying that everything is fixed, but shouldn't we be in a pretty fucking good mood after a 7-1 beatdown of the Pittsburgh Penguins?
Absolutely. Tonight's game was great.
I just think
it was a good
we're
game.
Optimist, we're in second place in the Central.
Like, realize that? all those pom poms on Twitter that are being like, oh, well, what will the trolls? They'll be so sad. They won't have anything to complain about. Like, we don't want to be that podcast, do we?
I assume none of those people listen to us anyway, so we might as well just stay down the road we've been going down.
No, they do listen to us. Some of them listen to us.
Of course they do.
Well,
they must.
No,
they must
I am an insider. Right, I would say, though, back to your point, Alan. I would say over the last four or five games, there's definitely been an improvement in their game. We can be honest about that. Those first, whatever they were, 2-2 or 2-3, whatever they were there, they should have lost all of those games.
They should have been 1-4, I think, to start the year was probably what it should have been.
And that's fine. So good. You win a couple games you're not supposed to. You're going to lose games that you shouldn't lose. There's a lot of times there's games that you should, you should have got your ass kicked, but you don't. So maybe that stuff evens out. But again, Hellebuck's not going to play like this all year. So,
but I mean, okay. So let's be part like the goaltending is a much better situation than it was last year.
Absolutely. Well, I mean, the way I look at this team is this is pretty much the same team as we had last year, but it's got so far, better goaltending. Right? Like, if we're going back and forth between Steve Mason and Andre Pavlik right now, is this team 5-3 and 2?
Or even last year's Connor Hellebuyck.
Yeah. They're not. Connor Hellebuyck has, I don't think that there's been one performance yet where we'd say he outright stole, but he's certainly primarily responsible for what? Two wins?
He's been solid. And he's been solid on the penalty kill, which is even more important, right? So your number one penalty killer has to be your goaltender, right? So he's been solid on the PK, like in all his games, and he's been really good. He's been really cool and calm, and he's got really good. His rebound control definitely is better than it was last year, and he's much improved. And you know, with Steve Mason having the game that he did on Friday, I think it bodes well, right?
Mason looked that as much as when Hellebuck's on his game, he's like the most square goalie I think I've maybe ever seen. Mason was like so square to the puck the other night, yeah. And that's how he looked. I went to training camp I think three different times, and every time I saw him in training camp, he looked like that, like just like an absolute angle perfect, and he looked like that the other night for sure. He did.
So it's a good situation in that. A great situation in it.
So again, what do you do though when he goes from 945 back down to 917? What does that make the record? How much does that change? I'm not, because nobody can sustain that. There's nothing drives me nuts when you listen to a morning radio show and they talk about, oh, look at how great Pavlik played the last four games. If they can get that kind of goaltending the rest of the way, it's like you don't get 960 goaltending.
Yeah.
You know, so it doesn't happen. It's impossible.
So if he regresses to 920, we've never had a 920 goalie.
Yeah, 920 is pretty damn good.
Yeah.
I agree.
We have a 920 goalie.
But
we have 920 right. percentage as a team, then we're in the playoffs, I think.
Of course. But where are we right now?
We said it all last year, right? If we had competent goaltending, this is a playoff team. So, well, kudos to Connor Hellebuyck for upping his game. Kudos to the Jets for getting a capable goaltender, I guess starting goaltender, in Steve Mason, who's hopefully gonna round into form and you know have good numbers this year. Like they addressed that situation. Great. Like they, you know, it's a big difference in the year thus far. 5-0-1 with Hellebuyck in net.
What's that? That's 10. That's 11 points. That's
11 huge. Out of 12.
I mean, 11 out of 12. Yeah.
Possible 12 points.
Yeah.
When he's been in net, right?
And again, so, like if you don't have like two of those games again where maybe Hellebuyck took most of the responsibility for those wins, the Jets are in last place in the Central.
They're so in second though.
They are in second right now. So that's
with games in hand.
It's a big deal. It's a really big deal. Fun though that Hellebuyck, you know, his contract will have to be renegotiated at the end of this year, while Mason, who's making twice as much, has 2 years. But you know, that's how it goes.
Sure,
they evaluated their goaltenders, and
that'll be nice in July to deal with. Assuming he keeps up this kind of pace, or even a 9:15 pace.
Well, I mean, they'll look at it and go, hey, you paid for, what, a 906 save percentage? You paid $4 million for 5 years.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then $4 million for 2 years. So if we're so nine...
He's at least a $5 million goal.
Yeah, for 920, then what is that worth, buddy?
Is that carry price money, like $8 million a year, whatever he's making in Montreal? Nobody knows.
Well, he should get like 9 if you're getting that those kind of save percentage with this defense. So, hey.
Give him Laine's money. Give him Laine's money. 10 million, and we'll just trade Laine, right? He hasn't done much. So,
I want to ask. I'm not going to read specific takes because I don't have anything in front of me. But just in perusing Twitter over the last week, I just want to say a few things out loud that I've kind of seen over Twitter and get your reaction to them about some Jets players, okay? First one, Toby Enstrom. Is he just not the player that he once was at this point?
Well, I mean, his age caught up with him, but he's still very serviceable.
And I would also, if I would suggest, if anybody's going after Toby Enstrom, they're probably not realizing who he's playing with, which is the guy that's been people have been going at all year. So that might his partner might have a little something to do with his play also.
And then even more interesting, Dustin Byfuglien. Things, a couple of pretty noticeable gaffes, certainly in the, I think in one of the overtimes, not terribly impressive. And I just, you know, Byfuglien isn't doing those Byfuglien things that make him noticeable right now, right? He's not crushing anyone. He's not, he hasn't really, he's got a few, he's got assists, like he's still getting points. But
yeah, that move where he takes the puck behind the net with one hand and then goes all the way around the zone. Has he done that once this year?
I think he tried once. I'm not sure.
But he had a bum groin, right? Right. He had a groin injury. So I don't know. Maybe there's still some remnants of it. Who knows? Maybe maybe he's not 100%. I don't know.
I just want to say something I've been saying since the beginning of Jack. Dustin Byfuglien, I believe, is a defenseman. I believe he's a good defenseman. He should play forward in overtime. It makes no sense for him to play defense in overtime. He can do all the things he wants and all the things that make him the special player he is, but there would be somebody back to help out. It makes no sense. If he's
him and Laine on the ice at the same time too isn't
that's not very smart either.
That's not a good idea.
Are there people that have advocated for Byfuglien to be playing forward in other occasions? Like, serious people? Because I've seen a few comments online, but I haven't really seen anyone. Like, I don't listen to the media in Winnipeg, thankfully. So.
No, I think the media's over that, I think.
All right, so we're done with that.
Yeah, and like I say, I never 5-on-5, but I think in overtime, it's only logical. What reason would you have not to put him at forward? Other than it doesn't hurt you defensively. He gets caught up ice. You still have Trouba back there. You still have Morrissey back there.
I think you throw Morrissey out there and put Byfuglien on wing and Scheifele at center or Little at center or whatever and play it out like that.
I just think it makes sense because he's cost us a lot in OT. I don't know if it's more than he's helped, but he does make a lot of... Because if he gets caught 5-on-5, he's okay to get back, or he's got a helper, but anyway, I've just always thought that.
And you're right, though. The blue line in general isn't as shiny and great a situation as it was like 2 seasons ago, right? We were talking about defensive depth forever, and the only problem was the left side, and now it's not really like that anymore, right?
Mm-hmm.
Another one for defense. I think at the start of the year, we were all sitting there going, Jesus, like Jacob Trouba, is he going to play himself into a $7 million plus contract over a long term? Based on the first 10 games, are we pumping the brakes on that?
I've seen a ton of that. I haven't, other than, was it the Columbus game? I think it was the Columbus game. I haven't noticed him being bad personally. But I know he had a rough night that night. But he definitely hasn't stood out the way he stood out the last 50 games last year. I mean, he was incredible last year.
So not bad, but not spectacular is kind of so far.
That's what I see. I know a lot of people have a problem.
Yeah, after the first 10, I think. I mean, he hasn't really done too much, but it's only 10 games, I guess, in that sense.
He's certainly getting the workload that he wanted when he signed the contract. He's got the most shifts per game of the team on average so far, 27, and he's playing 22 minutes a game, which is second most on the team after Byfuglien right now. So, and he's playing on that second power play unit. Still only 3 assists so far this year, but, you know, it's 10 games in, so whatever. But, I mean, we'll see. I think it's early. I mean, certainly, again, we can sit here and we can go, you know, things are going to catch up on this bottom six, and they very well could. But again, you got two guys who are going to get healthy and come back into the lineup. And you have players like Trouba and like Byfuglien, who you could argue have underperformed up till this point. And if that's just a consequence of injury or a small sample size, then there still might be better things to come.
So where is it all coming from? Because then you've also got Enstrom that people would say isn't playing well. I haven't heard glowing about Morrissey. Myers has been like he's been playing with lead in his skates. So how are they? I mean, I guess they're not when they lose to give up five goals, six goals. So
Dmitry Kulikov, I guess.
I don't know what is
that's the only name we haven't mentioned yet.
Again, when we say when they give up five or six goals, they've given up four goals in the last three games. Five goals in the last three games, two of which came in overtime.
Yes. So maybe the eye test on Trouba and Byfuglien is maybe not what people are, you know, maybe they're not seeing what they think they're seeing then.
Mm-hmm. Well, and you know what, the same could be said about Kulikov and Myers. They won the Corsi battle against Pittsburgh. It was pointed out to me. they were both over 50% Corsi, right? So, you know.
But tonight?
No, like Pittsburgh in other nights, like
three, four nights ago?
They looked horrible. They looked horrible against Pittsburgh, right? They looked horrible. And then I was complaining about him. Somebody who remained nameless actually pointed out, well, they won the Corsi battle tonight, so. That eye test.
So the one time the eye test isn't good enough.
Yeah, they may have won the Corsi, but did those guys watch the game?
Yeah, exactly.
Did they watch the game? That's
it was a troll job for you, but I'm just saying.
I got one more for you. 10 games in with one goal and four assists, 5 points. Brian Little. I mean, he's playing on that second line with Ehlers and Liney, and he's getting a lot of minutes, and he's on the power play. And, I mean, this is a guy that's coming into, what was it, $5 million?
You know how I felt about that contract, too, right? So, anyways. I don't know. And you know what? Liney's kind of quiet, 5-on-5. Ehlers has kind of quieted down since being on the second line, so... You know, it's a definite drop off playing with Wheeler and Scheifele than going down to Little's line, right? We can all agree on that, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Are we worried about Patrick Liney, or is it just it's going to pick up?
His shooting percentage last year was not going to be repeated, but I still think it'll be pretty high this year. I'm not sure what it's at right now, but
13%.
That's good, right? That sounds good. Pretty good,
yeah.
To me.
Yeah.
You know, that was pointed out before the season started by somebody that I think we all respect their opinion on a lot of things, was that line combination. Tony was pointing out that Ehlers, Liney, and Little don't have the best puck retrieval efforts. And you'll notice that actually putting the stats into action,
right?
You'll notice that if they don't start with the puck, they rarely end up with it. And I wonder if that's going to be an ongoing problem. Has anybody noticed Brian Little this year?
Not necessarily. No,
no, not really. Yeah. That whole line to me has been pretty invisible the last few games anyway. I mean,
but even when Nicky was going, right, he was on the other line. I just wonder if that's going to be a constant for the whole year. If those, I mean, they can't stay together if this is what they're going to do for four or five game stretches. So what do you do? Do you just switch centers? Do you just switch centers? That's what I was thinking tonight. You just switch Scheifele and Little and see what happens.
You know, how do you do that? How do you split up Wheeler and Scheifele? And they drive the play so well together, right?
I don't know if I would split it, but I mean, Wheeler has, you know, obviously played with Little for a lot of time, so there's chemistry there. Yeah. So maybe you look at it and you say, you know what, Wheeler's not going to be any worse off, and you can elevate Brian Little's game, and Scheifele can elevate Ehlers and Liney, and that's the trade-off?
Well, Scheifele and Ehlers have been good together, like, that I remember anyway last year. I don't know if that's true or if I'm just... So, I mean, maybe it's something like that could work.
That, you know, that being said, and I said, like, are we worried about Laine? But ultimately, right now, the top four guys on this team goal scoring, Wheeler, Scheifele, Ehlers, and Laine, are all on pace for 30 goal seasons right now. So,
right.
Exactly. That's good enough.
Not 120
goals right there.
And then you get what, 20% of your scoring from your bottom six? And you're all good. So, there you go. Let's do some Ask the Superfans, shall we? There's not many, but we've got a couple. What is this? Oh, yes. Okay. So hashtag MoMustGo427 at MenoKnight427 says, do you think KC, Kevin Cheveldayoff, saw any of the hashtag Ask a Jet questions before they wussed out and deleted it? So
no,
we haven't. Let me just tell the story. I don't know why the Jet, like, who in the Jets social media team is like, you know what? I've got a great idea. Let's take it to Twitter for your questions tomorrow.
Let's just get it out. Like, the Jets social media presence is probably the worst run professional sports team Twitter account, period, ever in any sport.
I don't know if it's the worst run.
It's not that bad.
First of all, I don't like.
Oh, it's horrible. Awful,
there's just nothing to it, right? Awful. Like, it's. If you want to say, is it promoting the team? Is it cheerleading the team? Is it giving you video and information on the team? It's doing all those things. It's just not a very fun account, right?
But and the thing is, this Ask a Jet thing, like, if they didn't learn their lesson last year with the whole Nick Fatan thing, this is they're at bare minimum the most tone deaf Twitter account in any professional sport. They have no idea. None whatsoever. How do you expose your general manager to that type of, you know, like, it's just totally tone deaf.
I just want to know, what the fuck would people ask him that, like, as serious questions, what would people ask him?
What do you have for breakfast?
That's what I don't understand about any of it.
How's the cabin? Like, I don't know. What do you ask them?
Yeah, like, with...
I don't understand.
Well, yeah, with Nick... with Nick Vitan, it's the same thing. Like, what were they thinking were going to be the questions that Nick Vitan was going to be asked? is the Moose locker room better than the Jets locker room?
We know the score. No, it doesn't make any sense because, like, it's not okay. In general, we're just talking about this the other day. It's not the 80s anymore. You can't hide things from people, like, oh, that was a good game because nobody watched it on TV because it was only on AM radio.
Oh, they try hard.
It's harder now. And the same is that we don't need to know what Nick Batan's dog's name is because if you have Instagram, you can find that out. Exactly. So, like, give it up.
It's like, what's your favorite part of Winnipeg to go to on a Sunday afternoon?
Where there's no fans. That's my favorite part of Winnipeg.
So on our podcast is his favorite place because none of us are fans.
They should all come on.
You know, I always wonder, like, I will bet, and I'm pretty sure that, you know, for the most part, most of these players genuinely do enjoy, you know, fans, but there have got to be times in some players who are just like, you know, fuck off. Like, when they arrive home at 3 a.m. and there's a stick salute from some fans, they've got to be like, fucking nerds.
When the same 60-year-old man is at the front of the autograph line, it's got to be wearing on some of these guys.
Well, they just got to look at it and be like, really?
I've had some funny interactions with them because I like to, I try to call them by their, like, their nicknames, their on-ice nicknames and stuff, and then just kind of give them a nod. I try not to talk to them unless I'm with my daughter, but that kind of always gets them. Like, I saw Matthew Perreault at training camp. I said, hey, Frenchie. And he just looked at me and said, hey, because I guess I spooked him because I used his nickname. So He kind of was like, wow, oh, and then he just turned his head and kept walking or whatever. But that stuff's great. I think they like that stuff when it's quick. It's in my, from my experience, I think they like that stuff. It seems like they do. You can tell when a guy's not interested and when they at least give at least half a shit. And I think, you know, I mean, you should know. Maybe some of the guys with the stick salutes don't know. I don't know. nice guys, but yeah.
Also, Mennonite 427 asks, how much confidence is Hen Grits giving the Jets on a scale of 1 million to 10 billion?
10 billion.
11 billion.
Just something I can't measure it numerically. How can you measure heart? How can you put numbers to someone's heart?
Hey, if Menno listened last week, he would know what Garrett said. You can't measure that.
No, maybe you can.
Maybe Garrett just can't get numbers that big into his calculator. Maybe that's the problem.
That's actually, you know what? That's probably it. It just goes right to infinity. Just, you can't.
Uh, 2014 Avalanche fan at OJetsO asks, how long will the Jets ride the PDO train?
As far as it takes them.
Absolutely.
Choo-choo. let's see here.
Right into the playoffs this year.
Right into eighth spot in the West, I guess.
But you know what? I gotta say something. I was listening to people bragging and all of those media people that came out and were like, if you told me we would have gotten 2 points on that back to back Columbus
Wasn't
Pittsburgh.
That amazing?
You know what? I have two thoughts on it. Number one, I agree. But number two, I agree because I have low expectations of this team because they haven't been good. Right?
Not because that's what we should strive for.
Yeah.
We should be at the point now where we could get 4 out of 4 points going to Pittsburgh and Columbus. We should be at that point, you know?
Yeah, like what it should
be convincing
is,
about it.
It's we shouldn't have any lower expectations than you need to win. If you don't win the game, you haven't met expectations. Not, well, we got a point, so hooray. Like, that's actually really good. No, it's not. You lost.
Well, I mean, we saw Darren Ford this week, and we all can, whatever. We don't need to go into anything more about it. But there's somebody that's as big of a supporter as anybody in this city and is for the brand, and it was just as critical as we are about that. Like, no, you got to go in and win. How are you going to win playoff series if your expectation is to tie games and lose in overtime? And I agree. You're not going in to beat Anaheim in a best of seven if you can't beat Pittsburgh or Columbus. Like, you got to win.
And I think, yeah, in that situation, we actually should have been expecting 3 of 4 points.
Yeah, I just...
The
bar, we're just not used to having the bar set high. Again, like it was a totally different world when I moved to Ottawa in 2003. And it was like this team, if they're not number one in their division and they're not making a run in the playoffs, it's horrible. Like, I remember they made the first round of the playoffs easily and they lost to Toronto. And it's like all night long session on the talk radio there about everything that's broken with the Ottawa Senators, who had like a 106-point season again.
I just said that to our biggest super fan this week. I said, you know, it's 6 years in. We have the most depth we've ever had. We should be complaining about different things than we were complaining about 3 years ago. We should be complaining that we got knocked out in the first round for 2 years in a row, or, you know, we got to push for the division lead, just like you're saying, Alan. That's what we should be complaining about this year, not are we going to squeeze into eighth place? And I don't know when that comes. I don't know when the fans turn that page and go, yeah, we should be winning.
There are a lot of fans that are turning their focus.
I've seen a few, but still.
And again,
500 isn't good enough. Eighth place isn't good enough, not with all the talent. And not going into a year where next year, you guys, and I'm talking to everybody, next year's our year. Because after that, the salary cap's going to be a mess and all of that.
And
if we're not ready to try and win the Stanley Cup next year, this with this team, that's going to be it for the older team.
This isn't the 1.0 Jets NHL, right? Like where
we have one more season.
That's right.
There were years where the original Jets, the real Jets, would make the playoffs with like 60 points. They would be like 25 and 45 and they would make the playoffs. But the NHL today, I mean, fucking 16 out of 21 teams made it. It was like the CFL. But now these days, like you have to win all the time if you're even going to have a hope at the playoffs, right?
Well, that's right. That's when you hear that they have to be better in their division. They have to be better at home. No, they have to be better everywhere. 2 years ago, I got an argument with somebody about next year, they got to be really good at home and really good in the division. And I said, no, they have to be really good everywhere. They were 18-5 against their own division last year?
Yeah, they were great against their division. Yeah.
It doesn't matter. You have to win 65 or whatever the percentage is, percent of your games. That's all that matters.
It's a process. It's a process, guys. It takes time. Like, come on, they can't all be the Vegas Knights, you know?
Yeah. Actually, if Vegas goes 500 the rest of the year with a few OTs, they're like in the playoffs.
They won, 7-0? A couple of days ago for Colorado?
Yeah.
What the hell's going on?
With an AHL goalie.
Yeah, they keep losing goalies. they can't keep a goaltender healthy over there. We've been begging for a goalie for 7 years and can't find one.
There's an unlimited supply of goaltenders in Las Vegas.
One last question here. B-Man in the BW at Super Jets Fan asks, according to the NHL app, the Jets are in second place in the Central Division. Is the app broken?
Actually, that's an awful app, so it is broken, but
they are in second place though.
They still are in second place.
I think that's it for the questions tonight. A quiet night, but you know, not a lot of venom out there because it's a big win for the Jets, so hooray. So we've got you know, after kind of waiting for a long time on the Jets playing any games, they played three out of the last four nights, and they're playing every second night all the way to next Monday. So should be plenty for people to digest, and hopefully some more news, and we'll pop back on probably in about a week and talk about it. But before we sign off for tonight, anything else anybody wants to talk about?
So Pomo's going to hit the over, hey? What was our over-under on the record?
I think we were talking about that hopefully – I said hopefully he'd hit it in that Phoenix-Vegas-Phoenix stretch over Remembrance Day.
Right, yeah.
And
I think I called them at 500, I think.
I had it 18, after game 18, 11, so
– So I'm 17, 17 and a half would have been the over-under, right?
Holy shit.
Probably something like that. Yeah.
This baseball game. Oh my.
What's the score?
7-7. Altuve just hit a 3-run shot.
It's that big bat.
That big bat.
Oh, sorry guys, I just fell asleep there for a second.
That's because you're not watching the baseball game.
Baseball, so adorable.
And you're listening to us.
so adorable. All right, well, guys, I'll let you all go and watch the end of the exciting baseball game, and we'll come back in a week, or if there's something else to go on about. If the Jets lose a couple of games, maybe we'll come back with some armed with something a little bit more.
Let me get a couple plugs in.
So
tomorrow we're having our shave off event. If anybody wants to get their beard shaved and ready for November, we actually have a event at the Saddlery at 7 o'clock tomorrow. We have two barbers coming in, and for a $10 donation, you get shaved and get your mow off to a good start. So,
do you have any celebrities coming in?
Well, Daniel Bridgeford's coming, huh? No?
Am I coming? I think. I'll have to check. I don't know. Am I working tomorrow? I don't know. I'll figure it out tomorrow.
That's the easiest shave of all time. Do you even have any facial hair?
No, you know what? Actually, I shave Saturday, so I think I'm good.
Will there be any gangster You're mailmen?
Good till next Halloween?
Yeah, I'm good till next year.
we have two very skilled female barbers coming in that do excellent work. They've lined my beard up and my mustache up for the last 4 years. So, yeah.
They're great people.
All right. All right, there you
and
go.
And the Saddlery is a great restaurant, too. We went there for the unofficial, official Jets draft party there. It's great.
That's nice. Great maybe food. Maybe they can sponsor this show.
Yeah, maybe.
We've got 3 months to go. 3 months of Superfans.
Sponsor. Hey, if anybody's interested in unique advertising opportunities, send Alan a DM.
I guess we should plug the show again. It's been a while since we've actually talked about this show. At AIH Superfans is the handle on Twitter. Hashtag Ask the Superfans if you want to ask us any questions. Find us on iTunes, and we have a Podomatic page, and we're on Stitcher and all the platforms. But if you go and type in AIH Superfans in a Google search, you'll find us right away. But if you subscribe, that's the best way to get this show sent to your device. If you want to give us a review on iTunes, go for it. Even if you want to give us 1 star, you know, whatever.
And we're going to the effort. Just give 5. Just give 5.
Yeah, I'll just be like, do you listen to the podcast or do you just read our stats? You know, when you give us your rating. So there you go. Otherwise, I guess, you know what? I guess we should talk, tell people to go to arcticicehockey.com because I think we're still kind of affiliated with them.
Yeah. Maybe?
I don't know. Who's the managing editor there now? No one?
I don't know. I have no idea.
At least follow their Twitter.
Yeah, follow their Twitter. It's a good handle. Yeah,
just give them a follow. Give them a follow.
Yeah. Anyways, other follows that you can have if you really want to. There's me. I'm at Slip with 5 Eyes or Slip.
Yeah, and I'm Big Poppy Pig City.
And I'm, I can't remember my Twitter handle right now. I mean, it's a rebrand.
Gangster Mailman.
Yeah. Knock the knife.
And Dan. And
I'm Daniel WPG55.
There you go, everybody. So give us all follows, please. And until next time, go Jets, go! Woo!